Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Indie Corner Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got an awesome, awesome guest. He hasn't been on the show before yet. He was on one of my shows. He's been on a bunch of my shows, but he was on one of them as a actor talking, you know, interviewee. But please welcome Mark D. Valenti. How are you doing, Mark?
Jonathan, I am, as always, doing wonderful. Thank you for asking.
All right. Well, we're gonna dive right in into the thing. So was, you know, acting something that you always wanted to do in your life, or is it just something you kind of stumbled onto?
Yeah, great question. I've always been a fan of film since a young kid. I know a lot of people that are in the film industry have been a fan, and they've been influenced, right? So I've always, especially horror movies, I always found them as a great way to escape from the regular everyday horrors that come up, right? I don't know. There's something fun about, you know, as a kid dressing up for Halloween or becoming somebody, something different. Since I've worked in healthcare for many years, I've had the privilege of acting as a patient in situations where you simulated patients. So whenever I became that patient and pretended to have cancer or pretended to be a father of a kid who's suffering from some sort of illness, I felt like I really got into the part, and I found a joy in that. So it's something that I maybe not formally have been to as far as the industry until summer of 2020. Before that, though, off and on, the different experiences, I think, had led me to that point.
So are you saying basically the pandemic got you into acting?
It did, actually, Jonathan. That's a great point. Yeah, in March of 2020, where I work in a large healthcare organization, which I will not name at the moment, March 17th was the last day that we were in the office. And I've only been in the office one time since March 17th of 2020. I'm not used to working at home. I've spent a lot of time teaching in front of people. Every week I would spend countless hours teaching and being up there and just presenting and talking about these different topics. And so I realized that I was kind of spiraling of working from home all the time in front of a computer, not able to teach, not able to act as a patient. And I was like, yeah, the pandemic was what led me to really pursuing acting.
Interesting. So yeah, well, yeah. And I love that. Like, I love that you, you know, kind of fell into it from, you know, I guess, you know, there are people have like always kind of said that the pandemic has done good and bad things, you know, and some of the good things, and I hate this sounds terrible, but some of the good things is being bored. You know, we realize how much time we have on our hands when we're not busy doing all the million things that we're doing. So it got me to do more content, and it got you to come into acting and to discover this and discover your podcast, right? Like, you discovered it through that too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course, I started Brain Burrow in March of 2021. So it's not even a year old yet. Same reason, right? It was just, I did a series of webinars in healthcare called Teaser in 20, where I would take some topic, a lot of alliteration there, right? It was sort of ditch your disclaimers was one of my favorite ones, which is we all use disclaimers when we talk. We say things like, oh, you know, I got to tell you something, you may not be entirely pleased with it, but here it is. So I've done maybe 50 20-minute sessions on different behavioral aspects, which I really enjoyed. But then I'm like, maybe I can apply that to the horror industry and acting and interview guests. So a lot of the strategies and things that I was doing in podcasting or acting or producing or writing even got their start in the healthcare field.
Yeah, that's cool. That's interesting to hear. Like, I like that, you know. So let's get into like, okay, so as an actor, do you feel like some people take classes and some people do that stuff? Do you feel like a lot, you need a little bit more formal training these days as an actor?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest lessons for me is, as I'm sure it's like that for a lot of people, is that this is a lot more difficult than I anticipated, you know, which is, you know, sometimes I get in my own head, you know, especially because my job is to train physicians and nurses and others on how to talk to patients. And when they do that, it's about driving them toward a certain goal. There's no script involved. There's no nothing like that, right? So acting, as you know, although you are reacting to somebody else, there's still a script. You're still headed to a certain pathway, right? With a patient who's struggling with diabetes, for instance, when you're talking to them, you may have a goal of getting them to take their medication, but maybe when you're talking to them, they say that they're struggling with finding housing. And guess what? That conversation goes toward them finding housing then at that point. With acting, there's a script, and let's say at the end of the script, the goal is for, you know, a couple to walk out of the house and drive somewhere. That's where you're headed. So my biggest challenge, I think, is being able to be more rigid in following a script with a specific goal in mind. So my point about saying this is there is an art and a science to acting, which I didn't realize how much goes into that. So formal training, I hear a lot of my colleagues, especially people like me that have gotten into this later, find a huge benefit in that. So I think that's something that I want to pursue as well.
Well, and you know what? I'm going to say this because, like, when I was out in LA in early 2020, I had a roommate who I loved to death. And she would go to acting classes. And she would go do that for, like, you know, 3 days, 3 days a week or something, you know, or whatever, 2 days, 3 days, something like that. And she would do this, do these acting exercises, and she would get, you know, it was so much fun because seeing her friends. And now it's like, and then all of a sudden, because of the pandemic and because of everything, everything's been Zoom. So you can still have the classes. It's just, you know, you're doing it from home. So I hear the acting classes, you know, and I'm wondering how much of that's going to actually continue to happen. Like, have you done an acting class on Zoom yet or anything?
No, I haven't. But as an instructor who spent decades teaching people in front of a class, I've had to adapt in teaching online as well. And I will say that it's definitely a different format. I mean, because I teach behavior-based topics. So it's very interesting to me to have to interact that way. And I imagine from an acting class perspective, it's the same thing, right? I can be animated here if I want and everything, but it's not the same as being there. I will tell you, Jonathan, that, you know, intermittently throughout the pandemic, I've done some live auditions going into places around Pittsburgh and being there and just being able to react and talk in person. And I've been so much more successful in live auditions than I have been in recording on Zoom. I don't know what your experience has been with that, but
well, I don't really audition. Like, I've auditioned a couple times. I'm not an actor first, you know, I'm a writer director first. Like, I always say that, like, if somebody wants to hire me, or if there's something, like, I was lucky enough to know somebody who knew a person who worked for Lifetime, you know, and just, like, you know, all of a sudden I got Lifetime gigs, you know, left and right, because, you know, I had that connection. But, like, you know, and those were extra gigs. Those weren't, you know, like, I did think I tied all those movies together by being my character, you know. It's like, oh, it's my own universe, you know, universe, like, they all, yeah, it's the same character just in different places or whatever. I don't know. I was just joking, but it was fun to kind of make, you know, I did four of them. And so I was like, it's sort of fun to kind of look back and see, but, like, it took nothing to be an extra, just, like, I had to pretend like I was talking to people or be a bartender, you know, or whatever, which I'm not a bartender. I've never bartended before in my life. So I was very glad that that actually worked out. Like, they weren't like, get a real bartender in here, 'cause this guy sucks, you know? So yeah, well, that brings up a good topic too, is playing different parts. You know, it's not like people don't hire you because you're Mark, the person who works in behavioral studies. So they're not like, we're going to keep cast you as a doctor. You know, I'm sure you've been cast as that, you know, but you've been also, like, a detective, you know, and other things like that. Like, right.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny because in the one film I was cast as a psychiatrist, and as I was, my co-star and I were talking, we were just practicing our lines, and that was just being me being natural, truly just as myself, being able to have a conversation. And somebody walked in from the other room and he's like, oh, I thought you guys were having an actual conversation about, you know, your family member. So it's what I find easy is doing this, as I'm sure everybody does, right? Doing the things that you know best. The other thing that I have seemed to be have a knack for is being the douchebag. And I don't know if it's just sort of like it's just sort of the natural tendency to employ sarcasm and, just being an asshole about things. But I find like I'm able to channel that. What I have more difficulty doing is being a straight-laced cop, for instance. So although I was a cop in Dr. Gift, for instance, which hasn't come out yet, it was more of a pontificating kind of thinks he's smarter than he is cop. And it was written purposefully like that, as opposed to a straight-laced cop. I was fortunate that my partner in that movie was actually a real cop, and he played it as a real cop. So I think it's a good, I'm sure it's a question that plagues a lot of actors, right? Which is, do you try to do multiple different types of characters, like Johnny Depp, for instance, or Gary Oldman, or somebody that just does multiple different things, or do you become typecast, like although he's a fantastic actor, Robert De Niro, right? You put Robert De Niro in a scene as the stereotypical mafia person, that's what he plays, and he just does that thing. So I don't
And he
know.
does it well.
He does it well, right? So do you harness your energy toward one specific type, where somebody says, you know what, I need this douchebag husband. You know who's a good person? Oh, Mark DeValent, he's a great person.
I
I don't know. I don't know.
know. Maybe after this, after they start hearing this, they might start thinking that, like, oh, I've got, oh, now I've figured out who could be my douchebag.
Right.
Right?
I
Hire Mark.
guess it depends on your goals, right?
Well, I mean, and then that's, yeah, you're right. I think a lot of actors these days try to do multiple roles so they don't get typecast. But when you're starting out, I believe, like, take whatever role you can get. Like, I believe, like, a lot of people start being selective when they're starting, and then their career doesn't take off because they are being too selective, or whatever. Plus, here's what I've learned, and I don't know if this is something that you've figured out or anything, but especially in the independent industry or something, if somebody turns down one of your roles, most likely you're not going to work with that person again. Like if somebody comes to you and goes, "Mark, I would like you to play the douchebag character," and you go, "No, I have no interest in doing that," you're most likely crossed off their list of people that they're going to go to. And unless they've worked with you countless times and then you've said it, like, "Oh, I can't play that," or you give a good reason. But most of the time, and I don't know if I've ever really done this or not, like, in my head maybe, but like once somebody says no to you, you're like, okay, well, they're probably going to say no to the next project and the next project. And so just word of advice, actors, is like, make sure that if you say no, that you let people know, like, that this is, this is not against, the production company or whatever. This is like, we just don't want to play a douchebag again,
Yeah, I
right?
think that's a great point. Yeah, you're right. Right. I mean, I know if because if you say no, there's 99 other people that are going to say yes. So,
Exactly.
right. I agree with you. Good, great point of advice there for sure.
But I mean, you should say no at some point. Like, I feel like there are actors out there that just take everything and everything that comes in, and that's fine. Like, I'm not disparaging them at all whatsoever. Problem is, once they start kind of doing everything, if they're in every movie that you see, people are like, I don't know if I want to cast them because like they're kind of oversaturated in the market. And
Great point.
that, like, after a while, nobody cares about that. So what are your opinions on that?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that, to your point, just say yes to everything and, like, oh, yay, I'm excited that so and so is in this movie. And you turn around on social media, and then a few hours later, so and so has been cast in this film. And it's like, yay. It's just, yeah, it's the same thing. You don't want to see, especially if it's somebody that plays the same character all the time, right? You don't want to see that same character. That same person in every film. Now it's
Exactly.
funny, right? I'm thinking of Ben Stein, for instance, right? He plays the same character. If you have somebody who needs to be that droning sort of instructor, he's your person. And maybe
Bueller,
that's okay.
Bueller.
You're right, exactly, right?
Yeah.
So So it's I guess it is always goes down to what do you want, what's your goal as an actor? What do you want to accomplish? You know, what is it that you're trying to communicate out there to the world? And if you if you love to do it, it doesn't matter how many films you're in and your goal is just to go out there and experience it, then do that. I think it's just a really, as anything in life, ask yourself, what do you want? What is your finish line and how do you get, and then ask yourself, how do you get there?
Do you do that yourself?
Yes, I actually do that in everything that I do.
Really?
I say like, what is my goal? What is my finish line? And then how do I run the race? How do I plan to get there?
This might be a, I don't know if this is a deep question or not, but I'd like to know because you might have the answer to this or not. But so say you are interested, you have a plan, you have this, thing you want to do, right? You have a big thing, but you don't know how to do it, right? Do you just move on to something else that's easier, or do you try to figure it out, and how do you figure it out?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So one of my goals in life and I value is activating people. Activating meaning, how do you help people realize what is it that they value and how do they be the best person? How do they be the best Jonathan Moody they can? So whenever I worked for, geez, it's been about a decade now, for the Pennsylvania Minority AIDS Initiative, it was about activating people that were HIV positive in their own health. It was about getting them connected to healthcare because at the time, about 40% of people that were HIV positive didn't get the health care that they needed. So it was about getting those people connected to health. Or when I worked for different initiatives about people that had depression and diabetes, they weren't getting help that they needed for depression. So how do we help get that? And then it was about how do I activate the nurses to activate the patients to do that. So to me, it's all about influence, right? So on set, on different sets that I've worked on, I've had multiple conversations with people about them as a person. How are they feeling? If they're stressed, how do I help activate my colleagues? I mean, you and I have had conversations before about that as well. So I don't know. It's weird. I feel like there's a book, and I can't even think of what it's called off the top of my head. It's called Persuasion, I think it's called. And it's about how do you influence others? And you can influence others from a position of authority. If you're like the director or if you're the vice president of an organization, you can influence by being that person in a position of power. You can influence others by having knowledge. There's a lot of times in my career where people have come to me and said, Mark, like MedExpress, for instance, they came to me and said, we want to be able to have our team members skilled in activating patients. We know you have the knowledge. There's a power there. There's a power in being notable or famous in some level. And the example I like to bring up is Morgan Freeman. A few years ago, he was hired to do these commercials about safety in child's what do you call it? Child's car seats. And basically, he it was just him talking, persuading people in the audience to really practice safe child, you know, car seats, whatever, like go out and do the thing. And it was solely based on the power that Morgan Freeman had as a famous person. What does he know about car seats? So I think there's a power in being famous or notable in some way, which could lead people to look at you and say, oh, maybe this person is worth listening to. And then that's sort of an in to be able to influence and activate others.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't see, that's the one thing, like there are so I was looking up at one point that there are like 16, or I don't know how many it was, but there was a lot of like kind of what the fuck is it called? So when you sort of like not just communication, but different skills that one will have in all these different things. It might be being an influencer, or whatever, having influence, and people flock to those people. You notice those people in the room, you run after them,
That's
right?
right.
And so they were, this person was going down, and they were, say, the three things that these people have, and then whatever in the YouTube video. And then I read them and I looked at influence and I was like, well, I don't have that, And they said something like, and that is not necessarily something that somebody just can learn necessarily. Like, you can might be able to learn it, but it's really something that like you have or you don't have, you know? And I've always wondered, like, because there are just some things like you can learn how to be more communicative. You can be a better listener. Sure. You can be, you can learn to, you know, whatever, be more active and whatever it is. But you can't, there are certain things you can't learn. And I think that kind of with acting, you know, to go back to the main
topic,
main topic in the whole scheme of everything is like, you know, that's the thing when it comes down to auditions, you know,
sure.
Especially if you're live and in person, they can kind of feel your aura and they can feel your presence and see how yes. you are in person. Then when they see it in person, they're like, oh, this guy's right. Or this guy's not right or whatever, right. You know? I remember I think I've only had one in-person audition ever in my life and it sucked. I was not prepared. Mm. I was not prepared at all. I was asked sort of last minute to come in and it was like a period piece sort of whatever. And I just, I blew it. I knew it when I did it that I blew it. Like, and I almost didn't even care, you know, at that particular moment. I'm glad because like, I don't like things that eat me up inside, you know? So when I just was like, okay, this sucked, you know, like, right. You know, I walked out. I was like, thank you for seeing me, and walked out. And I was like, okay, that's, you know, and so, and then I didn't stop. Like, it's not like that stopped me from wanting to get more auditions or anything. I just, once again, I'm just not an actor. Like that's, I've done some taped auditions and I don't even like doing that, you know, because like, you know, acting is just something like if somebody wants to cast me in something, I'm all for it, or I cast myself. But aside from that, I have no interest in just going out there and doing it, but I might, you know, more at some point.
Sure.
Now that you've been doing more like in-person ones, do you like, have you learned anything from the in ones that you've that have helped you along the way to get better at it?
Yeah, I think again, the in-person ones for me have been much more successful. I've had situations where people said, oh yeah, that's great. Or, oh, actually, can you read for this part? You know, so, and I think that speaks more to my strength of being more an active listener and communicator, which is what I do again in my quote unquote real career, as opposed to, you know, the taped auditions, right? I mean, to taped, the recorded auditions. So I think it's just, I think the only advice I'd say is just be natural, right? I think that's what, it's kind of an obvious thing for any actor, just to be natural. So for me, you know, when I've done some scenes with people, I was actually, you know, I don't want to reveal people's names. I just did a scene with a colleague of mine where I was the host in the film. I was the host of the horror movie show where I'm filming things, right? Premiering movies. And the person that I know very well was playing a horror movie actress. And it was just literally she and I just going back and forth and ad-libbing. It was a natural conversation. And the director said that he loved it as opposed to a very scripted conversation. I think that's been my biggest challenge, I think, is just sort of being in the moment of naturally responding, right? Because acting is about communicating and then having the other person communicate, then reacting and responding to that person. And it's a real natural dialogue. And I think that's been my biggest learning, I think, in all of this is it's about reacting and responding to the person you haven't seen with.
Now, I've learned a trick lately, and I don't know if this will help other actors or not, but it's sort of like, so if there's a close-up on you and say you're just not getting it, you know, like okay. You're just not getting the script or the lines. It's like, maybe you have a huge monologue and you haven't had time to just completely nail it. One yes. of the tricks that I learned was for the other actor, like that's playing opposite you, to say your lines and then you say them back to them, you know, right? After a while, you'll probably, you know, get it and then you'll remember everything, you know, whatever. But after doing it a few times, but like I actually never thought about that. And I recently heard that in an interview and I was like, that's brilliant. Like that's I've never, I may use that if my actors are having problems with stuff, because whatever helps get it done and get it done well,
Yeah, I think that's a great and you're, as a director, you're willing to help guide your actors in that technique. So I think that says a lot about you, and you're willing to activate your actors in that way.
Well, yeah, if they want to, like if that's something
Sure.
that they feel like they that will help them, I don't, if they got it, and they're just having like trouble, whatever. A lot of other times, I don't know how you feel about this, but I have as a director and writer, sometimes my scripts are too wordy, and people like well, I'm not gonna say any names, but some people have problems with it being the words, and will ask, can they change some of it or shorten it or whatever, as long as they don't lose like the initial, plan of it, or whatever, or they don't add, things that just don't need to be added into it, right? I think that I'm fine with that. Now, I mean, as far as you are, like, are you really good with dialogue, or do you like sometimes you're just like, oh my goodness, this is too much?
Yeah, I think it depends, like you said, on the director. And again, coming from healthcare, there's clear hierarchies in healthcare. It's medical assistant, LPN, RN, nurse practitioner, MD, special. Like it's just it go like so I'm very used to almost a hierarchy. So to me, when I'm on set, it's like whatever the director says is what the director, you're the boss director, whatever you want. And so I've asked directors, how do you feel about a little bit of ad-libbing? And I've never had a situation where people have been against that. Now, I will tell you, one of the best directors I've ever had, which may surprise people or maybe not, is Stormy Daniels. So it was, and I know that she's directed many films outside of mainstream. But she, we on the spot, we had some lines. And she gave me the lines, so I read them. I mean, I used it and I ad-libbed a little bit, and she just said, "Okay, this is really good. You did this, but do this differently." And I did it, and it was like she gave me sort of like, "Here's the end goal. Here's what I want you to do. Like, do your thing." And that I loved it. And I don't know. I'm speculating. Maybe it's because when she's directed in the past, she had people in some very precarious and vulnerable situations, so she was very empathic. But what I liked about her was she was empathic, but also directive. I've worked with some directors who have been on this end of the spectrum, which has been, yeah, do whatever you want.
Which doesn't
Or
help
other.
the to me, and honestly, that doesn't help the
No,
actor,
it doesn't. It's not very directive, right? And then
right?
on the other end, which I struggle with more, is here's how I want you to read these specific lines exactly. So you've had like very, almost authoritarian, and I've had very laissez-faire. Whereas in the middle, which is a nice balance. But I'm not just purposely advertising this film, Christmas Slasher. I'm not allowed to say that on the film on this interview. Destiny Soria was she. I really it was one of my most fun times on set because I got to play a character with a Minnesotan accent, and it was an opportunity to embrace this character. There was direction on where to go with the scene, but a lot of ad-libbing, and I got a chance to work with a colleague, Landon Banks, and he and I just like hit it off. I played this sort of oafish character, and he was this person who was constantly just grating to me, and like I was supposed to be, I'm trying to be his friend, and he was just, and it was an amazing experience where we were able to play off each other. We were ad-libbing, but it was still directive. So I prefer to at least have some direction on where to go, but with the ability to ad lib.
That's interesting. Yeah, I like that. Because I think I feel like I had an interesting thing happen where I was directing someone, but I didn't give them like, full on directions exactly what I wanted, right? So when the actor went and did their thing, I was like, ooh, that wasn't what I was, what I was planning. So I had to go back and tell them, like, this is how I want you to do it. Slow this down, do this, whatever. And some actors don't like that. I'm not going to lie. Some actors don't like to be directed. You know, they think that because they're being called in, that they are the actors and that they are, you know, that they are able to do it the way they're going to do it. You know, so it's
interesting.
But luckily for me, I've worked with many, many, many more that actually do love to be directed and what need to be directed.
Yeah, I mean, I've cringed in situations where I did a take and I'm like, how was that? And they're like, that was great. And I watched it on screen. I'm like, that wasn't great at all. Like, I want to tell me, like, please critique me. I want to be able to, like, and that's what Stormy did. Stormy was like, that was great. I appreciate what you're doing there, but here's what I want you to do differently. Yeah. So she affirmed me, but also gave me direction. And I'd rather be told what to do. I'd rather be told what I'm doing wrong, honestly, than just look like an idiot.
Well, that's what I try to do on set, is just tell people, you know, if you're like, you know, like I try to be positive about it, because, you know, you don't want to be like, oh God, that sucked. You know, most actors, and I hate to say this, most actors are insecure. That's why they go into acting. That sounds terrible. It sounds terrible. That's a thing, but like it's sort of truth. And then me too, I'm very insecure. So when I'm acting, I want a director to let me know, you know, if something wasn't the way they want it, but I don't want them to yell at me because, you know what I mean? Because that doesn't help, you know, but I want them to come down and be like, you know, hey, that, you know, you did a great job there, but let's try this different and stuff, or do it again, this time, do it like this or something like that. And if they don't know what they want and they're just kind of waiting for an actor to kind of figure it out themselves, then maybe they're not the right, you know, fit as a director.
That's right.
I don't know if you've worked with, and you obviously don't have to say any names or anything, but worked with directors that have been kind of hard to deal with in some way or another, and probably, you know, might not, you know, make it.
I think that, Jonathan, I'm glad you brought this up. I think there's a couple of things here to take away, right? One is, as an actor, so first of all, I don't know what your thoughts are about the hierarchy. My hierarchy is director's the boss on set. Whatever they say goes. If they say, whatever. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but and some people I know have struggled with that. But I'm like, if the director says something, no matter what they say, they're in charge of this whole thing.
Let me say that. I will agree. I will say that when you're on a bigger set, sometimes, like on the Lifetime set, the director won't deal with like the extras, you know, the smaller crew, right? And so somebody else will come in and help them out. But it gets very confusing, because I was on a set, I'm not going to say what, for one of the Lifetime, whatever, and there was one person giving me one direction and then another person giving me another direction. And I didn't know which one particularly, because I didn't know the hierarchy of that particular thing. So I did it the other way at one point, and they were like, no, we said go this way. And I was like, but they said go this way. It's like, oh, don't listen to them. Listen to me. And I'm like, I don't want to piss this person off who I just didn't listen to. So you got to, I mean, it is. And sometimes the producer can be the hierarchy. So
that's
the
true.
Producer is the whatever. They're not going to give you direction, but they're going to probably tell the director to tell you like you did something wrong because they're not happy with it or something, you know?
No, you're right. You're right. But no, it's a great point about hierarchy, being aware of what is the hierarchy in whatever set you're working on. I agree with you. So I think, I guess there's two parts of this, right? So one is instruction. One is guidance for the actor, one is for the director, right? So the actor, to your point, and I don't want to, of course, generalize, but it's like the actor may have a little bit of a sensitivity to getting radical candor. And there's a book, by the way, which I often talk about. Her name's Kim Scott. It's a book called Radical Candor. And it's about how do you care about somebody but give them direct feedback. And radical candor is different than obnoxious aggression, where you give them direct feedback, but you don't care about them, so it comes across as grating. You also don't do what they call ruinous empathy, where you're like, oh, great job, even though you don't think they actually did a good job because you want to hurt their feelings. So part of this is, as an actor, is the acceptance of receiving radical candor and being okay with that, you know? And as somebody who's been in situations where patients have given me death threats or have told me all sorts of things, like, to me, if a director is a little bit harsh with me, I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, comparatively, but it's based on your life experience, right? So one, as an actor, it's about being open to radical candor. And then two, to your point as a director, Jonathan, it's about being directive, being an activator, not being a harsh, obnoxiously aggressive person, but also not being a wishy-washy person. I was working with a director who is like, that's great, but is it okay if I give you some feedback on maybe something to improve just a little bit? Is that okay? I'm like, just tell me. You know, when a director does that, is very wishy-washy, I'm like, why should I have confidence in this person to give me direction? Because they don't seem to have confidence in themselves. So it's about being confident, but not obnoxious.
That's a good point. I've heard in a lyric that I listened to recently where it's trying to be egoless while self-assured, right?
Yes. Oh, I love that. Yes. Yes.
And so I, you know, or attempt to be egoless while self-assured, but I love that because, like, that is hard, you know, at times, yes. Because you have to look like you don't, you know, that you're not obnoxious, you're not arrogant, but you also have to show that you're confident in what you're doing. That's because right. As a director, you are a leader, you know?
That's right.
We hear all these talks of all these different directors and how they handle stuff. And like Joss Whedon, you know, got a lot of flack because he would be mean to a lot of his actors and everything. And I don't know if that was, you know, I don't know anything about that necessarily. Like, I wasn't on any of those sets, so I can't, you know, all right. I can hear is word of mouth, but right. It kind of makes me sad because I really like him. So I have to separate the art from the artist sometimes now, but, right. You know, he's not doing anything too disturbing. He's just being a dick and, right. You know, right. And those happen, you know, because people get egos, especially right. when you start kind of, you know, in the beginning, you shouldn't have an ego when you're first starting out as a director. You know, you should be kissing everybody's fucking feet that want to be in your movie. That's my opinion. When you start getting up there and you're directing like 20 movies or something, you know, you might start getting a little bit of a like, oh, well, I'm the director, I'm the boss, I've done this, you know, 20 times. What have you done? You know what I mean? Don't do that. You know, just be nice. Just be nice. I mean,
right.
It's so hard. I mean, to like tell people that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. And I don't know if it's because of working in healthcare for so long, since 1994. I'm older than you are, obviously. So it's just, you see it all the time, right? You see that whether it's toward patients, you know, maybe a patient is smoking and you have a doctor come into the room and say, you better stop that or you're going to die of lung cancer, which is extremely obnoxious. And the patient's not going to be like, oh my gosh, doctor, I'll stop. right. But it's more, so what I try to teach doctors to do is have a conversation with the patient. Tell me more about what's going on with you. What are your thoughts on this and smoking, and then guide that behavior. This isn't a training session, so I'm not going to go into that. But again, on the flip side, you may have, let's just say, a psychotherapist who says, yeah, tell me more about why you're smoking. And I'll conversation for years about that. You never actually get to a point where the patient stops. So again, as a leader, and I love how you made that connection, as a director is a leader, a VP in healthcare is a leader, a medical doctor is a leader in healthcare, a CEO is a leader in a business, you know, any business. It's your job as a leader to activate who works for you. It's you get people feeling comfortable with being innovative and creative, but also guiding them to a point that we're all reaching a common goal. And that's a pretty freaking, to your point, tough job.
Mm-hmm. So. It is. By the way, I want to commend you on being at a time when smoking was allowed in offices and stuff, you know, people, because like that doesn't exist anymore, you know, right. Like, I don't think, maybe vaping, but even then, I think they still tell you no, which I think is weird because like, vaping, you know, I think that's just right. To stop people from doing some kind of smoking thing. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. But but I do want to say, like, you're right. Absolutely. It's there are certain things guiding people to where you need to get them to, is got to be sort of simple. You know, like you said, you could have somebody say, you know, why did you start smoking? And then, like, for years, they never quit because they never get to that point or whatever. But if you're like direct with them, you know, of like, you know, like this, you know, this needs to stop, but this is how we're going to help you stop, you know, or whatever, if they want to stop, you know.
Right. Their point, motivation comes from within each one of us. And it's up to a leader, no matter who that is, to help kind of tie into that intrinsic motivation and pull it out.
Exactly. So yeah, so to go back to directing stuff and everything, when a director hires the cast and crew, generally speaking, they know who they want, right? Or whatever, they know what they want, or whatever, they hire the people. So when they get on set, some people, Woody Allen is known for firing people and then rehiring, like whoever's next in the line, I guess, you know, if it just doesn't work out. You know, in the indie world, we don't really have that option, you know, necessarily. Directors can't be like, you're not working out, so I'm gonna delay this production for another, you know, whatever, have people fly back out, you know, like 5 weeks later. And you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work like that. So they have to guess, like, you know, these are the people that are gonna work out and, you know, whatever. But have you ever been on a set where you're just not comfortable because like things aren't working out at all?
Yes. I mean, without revealing anything, I've been in situations where, it's not clear. There's no call sheet. There's no timing. It's again, without revealing, there's a situation where we had on set people that were specifically hired, who are more well-known icons, and those icons were just sitting around the whole day, you know. To me, I'm like, what are we doing? Why aren't they, we only have a limited amount of time with these people. Why are we not focused on those scenes with that person? And I think that's the biggest challenge. I think it's, you know, in addition to the communication background, I have a lean background, which is about continuous improvement, which is about how do you remove inefficiencies and processes. So a lot of times I'm looking at different processes, whether I'm at Starbucks or on set in movies or in a doctor's office, saying, okay, how do we make this process more efficient? So there's lots of times when I've seen that and I'm like, oh my gosh, why isn't the second unit, you know, doing something while this, you know, I always want to go back to my rule number one, which is respect the director. So I want to be careful not to make suggestions or other things when it's not my place. I will say that that's probably the chaos that I've seen in different situations when it's unorganized has probably been the thing that I've seen the most.
You know what? I'll say that it's, you're right. You know, you don't, as an actor, especially when you've never really, maybe you've never worked with these people before in your life, you know, you don't want to walk up to them and say, hey, why isn't this happening, or what's going on, or why aren't we shooting something right now? You know, I'll give you an example of something. I won't say what set or whatever of one of mine. We had a limited time with one actor because they were from another city, and we just wanted to get them done that day so that they didn't have to come back the next day. I, as a director, did not communicate that with my lead actress, you know, and she was waiting, and she kind of had a little bit of a meltdown because like her scenes weren't getting shot. We did have a call sheet, but the call sheet got sent out basically that day, you know? And so like, you know what I mean? Things like that started happening, and I, you know what, as the leader, you know, I made a decision to tell that actor that we weren't going to shoot with them that day if they're okay with that, you know, and we would just shoot what we were doing and we'd move along. We would just shoot more the next day, you know, or whatever, right? Make it up the next day, which we did, and everything worked out. And that actor was really happy and did sort of let me know that, you know, whatever. But that's the thing. Like, it was a learning experience for me, and knowing one of the biggest things I learned was if you have your lead actor or actress there that has like a lot more scenes and a lot more stuff, shoot them as quickly as possible. They don't have time to like sit around and wait, right. You know, and you don't have time for them to sit around and wait. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very big learning experience for me. Hopefully that director, whoever you're referring to, learned that lesson and used it in the next movie, you know, or whatever. If they did a next movie, I don't know. But that's the point, you know, like my thing is, once you are working with somebody, you know, that's what you have to do. So I don't know if that kind of explained things from your, you know, with your perspective too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to the I think all of it goes back to the hierarchy, right? I think it really does. I mean, you may have some ideas about things. I mean, it actually goes back to even a more basic principle, is don't share your advice if the other person's not ready for it. You know, Truly, it's like people often love to give advice to people without permission to give that advice.
I honestly think a lot of problems these days, and this is going to sound terrible, but I think a lot of problems these days are YouTube and how easy it is to sort of give advice to anybody, you know, like on TikTok, here I am telling you how to live your life. And I'm just like thinking these days, we kind of live in a world right now where everybody thinks, you know, I'm the new motivational speaker. And, you know, like,
I think you're right.
I feel like that's a problem.
And yeah. I mean, it's like, exactly. So like, and I'm not saying this for real, Jonathan, but if I said, you know, Jonathan, you may want to work on your background graphics because it's not really aligned and I can't see what it says. And I just want to let you know about that. You know, I'm just watching out for you. You know, oftentimes people give advice, but they keep giving these disclaimers like, well, I just care about you. It doesn't mean it's any less obnoxious in any way. So, by the way, I'm not really saying that. I'm just
trying to... I know. I don't really care. You know, like, and that's the beautiful thing. It's like you today, you know, because people give their advice so freely all the time that I honestly, I'm so used to it, just bounces off me. I just go, you know, I don't care. You know,
right? Well, and I think that's another point too, right? It's not actually that much different than a doctor telling a patient, you know, you got to stop smoking. It's what we call the writing reflex, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G reflex, where we just try to say, here's all a bunch of information as why you're wrong. And although someone like you may be more receptive to it, it doesn't mean that you're going to change your behavior, right? The ultimate goal of activating somebody is to guide them to a point where they're changing their behavior. And if it was just as simple as pointing out issues, then the world would be so easy, right? You just make a comment and somebody makes a change. But in reality, change is hard. And that motivation's got to come from within.
Well, this is a point I have to make, though, that wouldn't a doctor want the person to keep smoking so they keep coming to the doctor?
I can't speak to that specifically. But I mean, I will say that any doctor I've ever met has always been caring about the patient, which makes it even more frustrating for them because they're like, I want this patient to stop smoking because they care. You could argue that maybe some hospitals could want people to keep smoking because they get the money from that for the admissions. But I'm not officially saying that. If anybody's listening, I'm just saying you could argue that that would be there. So,
yeah, well, I mean, it's like, you know, any kind of situation where people, I always thought like, you know, there's that joke that I think, was it Seinfeld or somebody said an ambulance is spelled backwards so that they could drum up more business, you know, or whatever, you know, so people pay attention to the ambulance spelled backwards and then, well, what is that? In a car crash.
That's right. Exactly. So that's, you know, that's an interesting perspective. For that movie, I think was a Thank You for Smoking or something like that with Aaron Eckhart in it, I think was, where he's working for a tobacco company and their goal is to try to get people to smoke more.
Yeah. That's hilarious. I never did smoking, which I mean, I never smoked. I was not like, I was always like the goody good kid, you know, that was like, and then later on, I was like, screw it and became an alcoholic, but like, you know, or whatever, recovering alcoholic.
No, I get that point. I think I just use smoking as an example, but yes, it could be alcohol. It could be having two Big Macs for dinner every day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It could be all sorts of different behaviors.
Exactly. And you, I mean, It's interesting that you basically studied that, though. That like yeah. That's your job. That's your life.
Yeah, yeah. I've, yeah, it is. It's. I've done a lot of work and teaching and partnering with organizations. I mean, I work with a company that has a series of online learning, and I'm part of their curriculum out there. Actually, my colleague, and I always call her out, Brittany Wilson, who's a nurse. She and I have done our stage scenarios where we're being doctor and patient or nurse and patient, and we teach people this. And this company has hired us to create online learning where we talk about these, where we teach. So it's but yeah, that's what I've done since 1994. So
well, good. So you said you played a like psychiatrist before and everything. Have you ever like read the scripts or whatever, like read like doctor scripts and just been like, ugh, they know nothing about what it's like to be a doctor?
Yeah, I have actually. There has been at least two situations where I was like, I'm not really sure that this is how this conversation goes. Thankfully, the director in both cases was very open to me making some changes on that. But it's like that all the time in movies, right? Maybe you're a weapons expert and you see people using guns on the screen. You're like, wait a second, that's not right.
Yeah. Right. And then you, like, if you're on set for stuff like that, like I knew of a actor who was on set. I think he was like one of the safety people or whatever, safety, like gun safety people. But he like let people know like a, you know, a person's not, and it was on Transformers, by the way. So he walked up to the, you know, people there and said, you're not going to be a, if you were in the Marines or something, because I think he was in the Marines or something. He's like, you're not going to actually do that, blah, blah, blah. And the AD was pissed. Like, who are you to tell people whatever? Whoa. And then, you know, was it Michael Bay came up and said, what's going on? And he said, what he said, he goes, listen to that guy. He's our, you know, consultant on this, you know?
Oh, wow. Like, okay.
Yeah. Right. And they did that. And they did it exactly the way that the guy said it. And when I heard that, I said, I have a lot more respect for Michael Bay now, you know, because, you know, he listens to the people that need to be. And I feel like a lot of times you don't have a consultant. They don't have a psych, right. You know, if they hire somebody who actually is of that field, that's one thing. If that's they right. hire Joe Blow, nobody who's never played a psychiatrist before and doesn't do any research on it, you that's know. Right.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a great point. I think so. The other example, two examples, really quickly. I know we're running out of time. Stormy Daniels was another person where we were on set, and in the scene in the movie, there was the person would escape from a quote unquote mental institution, right, a psychiatric hospital, and she was like, she asked me, she said, would this really happen? Because part of my career actually worked in one, and I gave her some feedback. So like she, as again, it goes back to advice, right? She was a director who was very, again, one of the best directors I've worked with, who was open to advice. And she recognized me as an individual and said, what do you think about this? The other scenario, and again, I'm not going to name situations, but, and I'm not obviously a cop. I'm not a cop or in the military, but they put the insignias of the flag on the sleeve and put the flag. And I don't know how much you know about this, or your listeners or viewers know about this. But the flag should always be, like the stars should always be facing to the front. Otherwise, it looks like it's a retreat. So if the insignia of the flag is on your right arm, it's like reversed. Like the stars are in the upper right-hand corner. That's the way it should be, right? Which isn't the way you look at the flag, but it's because it's like you don't want to put it in retreat. But on set, the uniforms had the flag basically in the wrong place. And again, it goes back to hierarchy. Is it my place to say anything about that if I notice that, you know?
I think it is, in a way, like at least let, you know, not in a like hey, you know, this is wrong, you know, kind of way, but like, you know, point it out to somebody, like,
right,
aren't the flags supposed to be on this side? And then if somebody goes, oh, let me look that up, and you know, right, oh crap, you're right, you know, like I right. feel like people should not be afraid to say something. I'm always okay as a director. I'm always okay with somebody pointing something out to me. And
yes. You are
right. And I feel like more directors should be. How, you know, like Paul, my co-host, and he's my partner for a lot of my production stuff. He will point out things to me that I did not like even think at the time when we start making it. And I go, that's a good point. Let's make sure we do that. You know, as but I mean, there is that hierarchy. He's just below me, you know, so he, you know, he but he's there, you know, with me producing, so he can say that. Now, if you know, I've had an actor who I love to death. I'm not going to name him, but I love him to death. He pointed out, like he asked, could we do this? Could me and my partner do this and this and this? And I said, perfect. You know, as long as, you know, it's, you know, as long as it's fitting for whatever you're doing. So, as I said, like just be or don't be afraid as an actors, and more actors should not be afraid to like at least ask. Worst that comes to worst, if the director's a dick and is not going to listen to you whatsoever, then that's not somebody I would want to work with anyway.
Well, that's actually a really good, that's a good point, Jonathan. You're right. Yeah, I love that idea about, and I think with any time you want to give advice to somebody, I think it's about asking permission. You know, hey, Jonathan, you know, do you mind if I give you a bit of feedback about something I noticed? You know, for instance, that goes a long way, right? You're giving, and a director's perspective could be the same thing. It's like, you know, hey, Mark, do you mind if I give some? Well, again, as a director, you want to be more confident. You don't want to always be like, oh, do you mind if I whatever?
Exactly. I was going to say it goes back to the one director you're
Right,
talking about because that is the truth. You don't, the director doesn't, the
that's right.
director's the, once again, a hierarchy. He's
That's
the
right.
head,
That's right,
he's the
director.
leader. He should, you know,
Direct.
be direct, and he should tell you exactly, and he should be direct, you
That's
know.
right.
And
Yes, it radically candid is what I'd like to say. So, yes.
yeah, exactly. If they come up and say, you know, Mark, do this, Mark, do that, you do it, you
Right.
know. However, if you really, I know there are actors out there who they say, oh, one of my favorite things was Hitchcock. You know, Hitchcock was a very direct director. You know, he would tell you what to do. And there was like, I think it was Gregory Peck or somebody like that was like, my character would not like look up there at that particular moment. And he goes, well, you're gonna need to look up there because that's where the camera's gonna be, you know, and blah blah blah, you know, like basically telling you you need to do this. That's where that's, you know, like, you know, it doesn't matter what the actor, I feel like the actor might say, I don't feel like my character would do that. A lot of times it's because they're insecure about something that's in their thing, and they need to get over that because an actor should do whatever the director says, or the director could technically fire them, you know, if
Yeah,
they
you're
wanted
right.
to, you
And
know.
that's the right to be able to do that. And I think that if nothing else from this conversation today, as I know it's been an hour, it's about the hierarchy and recognizing what that looks like on set. And then again, as directors, recognizing because you are in a position of power, be as collaborative and kind, but also confident when you are communicating with your casting crew.
Exactly. Just be, yeah, confident and kind. Like I feel like that should be the slogan for every director, just confident and kind. I myself, I've said insecure at times, whatever. When I'm on set, I don't have time for that. You know, you have a million things to do. You can't be, you cannot, you do not have time to be like, I don't know if I should do this, or I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have time for that shit. You have to get shit done. So when I'm on set, that's where my confidence like rises.
That's great.
Because, you know, in the beginning, it was scary because, you know, I didn't know shit, you know. But it, you know, once you start getting it, you start getting it and you can keep going with it. And I feel like the more people learn as directors how to handle situations, they'll get better, and hopefully
Agreed.
they, you know, hopefully they won't make a mess, you know.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, side note, as we're talking through this, and I've had directors talk to me directly and have said, how do you think I'm handling this? You know, given my background, and I gave them, you know, guidance. Maybe I need to start a consulting service to help directors be more communicative. So who knows?
That would actually be very cool. Like you could do that for like Fiverr, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good point, right?
Yeah, you could go on Fiverr and be like, hey, do you can directors, do you want consulting advice?
Yeah,
You
right. Yeah,
know, or
consulting on
whatever.
how to activate staff, you know, or just staff, cast and crew. So, I mean,
Yeah.
I do it now in healthcare, so why not?
All right. I mean, it might help. But also, once again, those directors should hopefully take your advice, you know, or take your ideas, or at
Right.
least whatever
Well,
you lead them to, you know.
but then it would be my job to help get them to a point where they want to do it and follow through with it. So,
Yeah, well, hopefully they do that because, you know, like a lot of times people go back to their old behaviors, you know.
that's right. Well, good point. That's
I'm
exactly
sure you're, I'm sure you feel the same way as an actor is like, you know, you have behaviors that you've done before, you know. It's okay. All right. This is going to be the last question. And this is
it.
a very, I guess, a very personal, but very
Okay.
like, you know, whatever question. So you know, obviously as a behavioral studies person, you had to look into your own life and your own behaviors and the whole things that you do. When you took that into acting, was like, did you notice old behaviors and old things that you used to do
Yes.
come back into acting?
Yeah, so that's a great question. That's a fantastic question, actually.
Thank
It's a
you.
very vulnerable question. In my field, I'm in healthcare. I'm sought out. Like people hire me to do all sorts of work, right? But one of my mentors a long time ago said, one measure of how good you are at something is that people will pay you for it. So people would, I'm a consultant. Like in addition to my regular job, I'm a consultant. I mentioned MedExpress, but other organizations have hired me to come in and train their staff and get paid fairly well for it. So I feel like I'm at the top of my game in certain areas, right? And published in medical journals, et cetera. With acting, I was starting off from the beginning. I was no longer Mark DiValenti expert in this, right? I was Mark DiValenti maybe has some experience with some acting. So what I found, Jonathan, was after decades of being top and confident, I was pretty vulnerable, and I found myself reacting, and emotions came out in a way where I was like, I'm no longer top, and and to get to the top, let's say measured by IMDb number one, I'm not sure I'll ever get there, you know? So with part of it was coming to terms with my own inability to have the same level of success that I did in healthcare, and that was tough for me, especially as it came to relationships where I was like, oh, geez, I'm not as good as most of the other people I work with. So for me, it was a very humbling experience.
That's a good point. That's a good way to look at it because, and I feel like, you know, these days a lot more people should be humble, you know, about, you know, I know a lot of people who they get upset like they didn't get the gig they wanted. They didn't get the they're not getting the enough money to make their movies, you know, but other people are surpassing them in some way or another. And you're right, exactly, because there are, especially when you're first starting out, you're at the bottom of the food chain, you
Yeah,
know, and
that's
everything, but you're getting higher and higher as you go, and you're starting to learn more, you're starting to get more knowledge, you're starting to kind of become more professional in your field of study, and that being acting now, as well as obviously you've done the stuff. So that's amazing. I like that because it's one of the things you'll never like will I will never be the top director, you know, never, most likely. Like and people are like, don't ever say never, you know, blah blah blah. You don't. I'm like, dude, I'm not Quentin Tarantino. I know that, you know. I'm not trying to be Tarantino, but I know he's better, you know, and he's more gifted. Like that, he just was, you know, from the very beginning. He knew he was, you know. I am, you know, but I'm not trying to be like the next Tarantino. I'm trying to be myself and trying to, you know, figure that out, you know. And that took years, you know. Some people think they already got it. They already figured it out after one movie. And I'm like, great. You know, most of the time they haven't, you know. So you figuring that out already that you just weren't, you know, that you're working your way up, and you know, who knows, you might not be number one on IMDb, but you might be number 3,572. Right. And that's still higher than millions and millions of other people. You know what I mean?
Literally, you're right. You're right.
Right. Yeah. So there's millions of other people on IMDb that are, you know, and all of them are trying the same thing. And yeah. It's, you know, who's, once again, it's who's right for what role. So if you audition, you don't get it, don't give up. It's that's right. Not that just wasn't the role for you. I've always looked at, like, the last I think thing I'll share tonight is that I've always looked at like Star Wars. You know, Christopher Walken auditioned for fucking Han Solo. I'm right. Sorry, but I can't imagine anybody but Harrison Ford.
Right.
But, or what's the other guy's name? Guy from why can't I remember his name? From The Thing, Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell, I believe, went up for it too. I saw his audition. Fantastic audition. He did great. Would he have made a great Han Solo? Maybe. But he was no Harrison, like Harrison Ford, right. You know. Right. And originally he wasn't, you know, he wasn't going up for that. He wasn't allowed to audition for that. And they just thought, oh man, he is, you know, he was doing reading and whatever, buddy. I mean, it goes to think, like, you know, if you're an actor, you know, and you might say that sucks, or you might've been like, man, I would have been better in that role than that person, but that person got that chance and they did it, you know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, maybe it was good. Maybe it was sucky, you know, you just never know.
That's until right.
The movie comes out, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And then the final comment I'll say to that is, on Brainboro, interviewing so many different successful actors who say that they are rejected often whenever they're, you know, auditioning. I'm like, wow, if David Howard Thornton, you know, struggled, as he's admitted in the show about, you know, of course, played Art the Clown in Terrifier series. He like struggles. He struggled with like being rejected. And I'm thinking, and when I, that was an early, you know, interview that I did in Brainboro. I'm like, wow, like these are actors who've been doing this and have been successful and they're still turned out. So, I mean, it gave me some like perspective on how hard it is to audition and how, to your point earlier, being okay with rejection, honestly, it's one of the toughest things.
Danielle Harris, I've heard multiple different stories from yes. her, and she has talked on multiple interviews and everything about how hard sometimes, like she'll go in for an audition and she won't get it, you know, or something, you know, and maybe it's just her height, you know, maybe it's right. like somebody. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, she's like, I could wear heels, you know, like, I mean, I don't understand like why you don't cast me. And sometimes it's really just a matter of like, you're just not what the director's looking for. You right. know, maybe the director right. that day decided he wanted a blonde, right. you know, but he right. had a bunch of brunettes come in. And right. so, you know, you're just not going to get it. And so it's not anything against you personally. And I feel like a lot of actors take it personally.
True.
And they got yes. to stop that shit. Actors, right. if you're listening to this interview, you've got it to this far, man, stop. You like worrying about your rejections. You didn't get it. Move on to the next one. And right. sometimes it takes a thousand rejections before you see one yes. And you know yeah. what? If you're really that dedicated, you're going to keep going, you know, yeah. until it happens. Once again, I'm not an actor, so I don't that. But if I wrote something and it got rejected, you know, I wrote a script to put it into a screenwriting contest, didn't even get part of the 200 or whatever people, you know, finalists. And you know what? I was okay because they were going to send me notes on how to fucking fix it. You know, maybe right. people should start. Well, I guess directors can't send in comments on why they didn't hire the person, because, you know, that's kind of fucked up. But yeah. you know, as a writer, it's a better thing. Anyway, yeah, thank you so much. First of all, I know you got your Brainboro podcast and everything. How's your YouTube thing going?
Great. I'm looking at other platforms to upload. I still have the audio version across all platforms, right? Spotify, Apple, I mean, everything is out there. Yeah, the YouTube situation was very, again, humbling as well, right? To all of a sudden get an email that says, we deleted your channel. And if you have a, you know, with no, it actually came out as multiple or egregious violations of sexual community standards or something like that, or some like random thing like that.
Oh, I thought it was honestly, because a lot of people are talking about it, it's like, and I'm afraid to say this word, the C word these days, you know.
Something else.
It's a disease that would, it shall not be named.
Say
that, and I've heard that, like, if you say I looked into it. It's like if you give misinformation or something. So,
I mean, people have been very open and honest on that show, whether it's directly swearing or giving their political or religious opinions. So what frustrated me was, it wasn't, hey, this video violates standards, remove it. It was like, we've deleted everything, you know? So,
and you didn't get any responses before, like ever?
Nothing. There was nothing. Literally, I've had that channel up. I mean, yeah, I used it for Brain Burrow since March, but earlier on, I used my channel for healthcare. Like, it's been up there since 2007. And that's what they even said in my appeal. I was like, hey, listen, like, whatever, just tell, like, I would have done, like, I've been a loyal subscriber and channel user with no problems before. Just, if you would have told me, like, tell me what it was I needed to do, and I'll make changes. But there was nothing. I mean, that was the most bizarre and upsetting part of it. So I've gotten some feedback that suggests that perhaps somebody reported me for something, perhaps angry person. Yeah, it is. So it's like, so whatever. I mean, like, so I could either be upset about, I'll be honest with you, I was very upset because I put a lot of work into it. Ironically, you and I had talked about that probably the week earlier, but I figured, all right, well, you know,
We talked about that. Like, that was our discussion, is like how to improve on YouTube. And then
that's right.
All of a sudden out of nowhere, it's like, what the hell?
I know, right? So maybe somebody's listening. But, you know, I've also heard people have said that on TikTok and on YouTube, sometimes people that are monetizing, which I was, it's more strict. Like, oh, let's remove this because they don't want to pay out. I don't know. Who knows? There's all sorts of, here's the problem, right? In the absence of actual information, we all sort of put in our own ideas.
Right.
So, but I honestly blame YouTube though for not at least giving me a warning or explaining explicitly what happened.
Yeah. Or like if it was a specific video that was, you know, a problem, to like say, hey, take down this video or edit it or whatever. That scares me, because that just means that, like, you know, YouTube at any time can just get rid of anybody. At like the one thing I learned from, like, DoorDash, running DoorDash. I did DoorDash for years. And what I heard from somebody else, that they got kicked off DoorDash because of one person's report to them.
Really?
And everything. And I thought, wow, like, that, thankfully nobody ever reported me. I just kind of quit. But like,
they could, right? They may not have liked the look of you or something. And they could just, I think that, to your point, Jonathan, I think that's the scary part, right? It's like, based on one thing that's unknown, it could be, to use the C word. So,
yeah. Well, I think that's the problem with our society right now. Exactly. Right. Is that, like, people can report or whatever, and they will be, like, looked at, and they'll be like, oh God, we don't want to upset this one person in the whole world, you know, so let's fire this person, basically suspend their, you know, whatever and stuff, instead of, like, looking back and saying, well, this guy's making us a lot of money. Like, you are making them money, right? Like, that, I mean, when you're a part of that thing, they're paying you, but they're also getting a cut of that money. So it makes no sense for them to do that unless it were like multiple accounts reporting you for whatever. And even then, like, at least let you know ahead of time, this is what's going on. I feel like That's the problem. Whatever. So we're living in a terrible society right now.
Now, as a result of this interview, you know, who knows what may happen now with your podcast.
Podbean loves me. Yeah, I don't think Podbean. The beautiful thing is I don't put this stuff on YouTube. Right, Podbean might. Podbean might. I don't know. Oh, yeah. But because they do it randomly, they'll put like random ones up there. But onto YouTube. But I don't. And YouTube doesn't like check everybody's freaking thing. They, you know, like right. They don't know what you're right. Saying.
Unless, like, again, to your point, you have a disgruntled person reporting you or somebody who's offended.
Exactly. So that's what I think happened. And I am so sorry for that, because that sucks.
I appreciate that.
So hopefully there'll be another video format, or everybody can still check out you're still doing your podcast. It's still coming out, right? When does it come out?
So it typically comes out on Thursdays. You know, I have probably about five in that I've done already that I just need to put out there. So typically on Thursdays is when it comes out. Definitely some horror icons out there that I've done, including Lloyd Kaufman and Jessica Morris and Beatrice Epley, who of course was Freddy Krueger's mother in the series, and just.
Aww.
Right. Yeah. So just some great interviews that, you know, the audio is great, and I, you know, appreciate the audio content, but, you know, people tune into these because they want to see these people that they've seen and you know, on movies and things. And
they want to watch the videos. Yeah.
That's right.
And
exactly.
So it sucks, you know, when, this happens, but unfortunately that's the way the fucking cookie crumbles, man.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But, you know, but thanks for your empathy and sympathy in the situation.
Well, I don't want to end on a sad note, but, you know, but I'm glad you're still, you know, your stuff's still out there. So everybody check it out. Is there a website that people can go to?
Yeah, it's just brainborough.com. You know, if you want to go there directly, it'll put the links to the different.
Are you able to put up the videos on the website?
I can. I think if I was going to be very honest, which I am, I think I have to go. So right now, because there's so many videos, I've done 67 video interviews. I uploaded them to YouTube and uploaded them to my Google Drive. So I have to transfer them all over to whatever new platform. So yes, I could use brainborough.com and just do that directly from there, which I may do. You never know. So
yeah. Well, so check out brainborough.com. Check out all the interviews. I mean, I've listened to a bunch of them. I love them. I know a lot of my friends are been interviewed on the show, so I adore it. And everybody else, check it out and let us know what you guys think. And hope you guys enjoyed this. This was a little longer, but it worked. You know, I think it was a fun show, and I think we got a lot. There was a lot more in it. You know, there's a lot of meat in that interview. So thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan, for having me. It was a pleasure to talk with you, as always.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you guys for checking this out, and have a great one. Bye.